Welcome to Tech Central. Welcome to our studio. Welcome to TC Daily, South Africa's new daily technology show. My name is Duncan McLeod. If you've missed any of the episodes we have released so far, do go to youtube.com/TechCentral. You'll find them all there. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that bell icon and you won't miss any episodes. Of course, you can also get them from Tech Central itself. That's techcentral.co.za. Subscribe to our daily newsletter. You will get that at 5 a.m. every day with all the latest episodes of TC Daily and all the latest South African and international tech news. Got a very exciting guest in the studio now. I'm very pleased to welcome Jan Pilbauer. He is the CEO of an institution called BankServe Africa. Jan, many South Africans probably haven't even heard of BankServe Africa, but you play a fundamentally important role in South Africa's financial ecosystem. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Tell us a bit about BankServe Africa and what it is you guys do.
Yeah, so we are behind the scenes, but we are those people who make the money move. So the fact that you can now go to any ATM and use any card to withdraw cash, or merchants don't have to have multiple point of sale terminals based on which card you bring.
Right.
That's kind of the interoperability we enable behind the scenes. Also, when you get salary through all the EFTs and these monies, that's also something we move behind the scenes. Unfortunately, also the debit orders which come, that's also our doing. And because we know how payments move, some people may have heard about us also because we do these indices, how the economy is doing, what is the take-home pay and stuff like that.
So
yeah, we do also that. But we are behind the scenes, so most people don't need to know about us if everything is working the way it's supposed to.
But without BankServe Africa, there is simply no economy.
That is correct.
You are the flow of money between financial institutions.
That's kind of our saying. We want to power economy, improve lives, always. That's what we do.
Right. So who owns you? Are you owned by the banks?
We are owned by banks. We have four key shareholders, the largest South African banks, but we also have minority shareholders, some of the smaller banks. But our governance is a little bit different. Our board is half shareholding and half independent, and the chairperson is independent as well. So technically, we are driven by the public policy objectives and doing the right things for South Africa.
You're a non-profit, I take it.
We are not for profit maximization. So we generate profit because we need to reinvest into our technology and stuff.
And you're quite fundamental to the whole payment system. So you must be quite a tightly regulated institution as well.
We are very regulated. We have a couple of regulators. Mm-hmm. Other people are interested in us. So yes, we have PASA, the Payment Association of South Africa, as one of our regulators. They are giving us a license. And then the South African Reserve Bank is also our regulator, and FSCA, from a conduct perspective, they are not regulating us, but we are in close connection with them as well.
Fascinating institution. And it's been around for a long time, 50 plus years.
We celebrated 50 in June. So it was 5-0, big celebration. And we have a nice little book showing how the world evolved from the magnetic tapes being brought and the checks, the paper checks being brought to our offices. Now everything is electronic in small and more small data centers. And now with the new platform, we will go completely to the cloud.
Many
changes.
We're going to get into that in a moment. But yeah, the financial services industry has changed. Just talking about tech seems like such a dated concept now. But before the days of BankServe Africa, how did one do a financial transaction from one bank to another?
Well, no, there was no interoperability, right? So don't forget, electronic payments were not so common. So it was really the checks. And people were exchanging checks. So people were carrying bags from one branch to another. And then, you know, that was the beginning of, because we are something called clearinghouse.
Yeah.
And as the couriers were kind of coming from one bank to another, from one branch and another, they realized it's probably better and more efficient to meet in one spot.
Right.
So sometimes they did it in a pub, which, you know, why not? But you meet at a spot and you do this exchange clearing and, you know, and then you go back to where you came from. Mm-hmm. So that's how clearinghouses actually were created. This idea that you don't have to do everything bilaterally.
Yep.
You can do it more effectively by a center entity everybody trusts.
It's fascinating stuff. But something which really actually surprises me, and I know South Africa is largely a cash-based economy, but the numbers to me almost sound amazing, that so many South Africans, 9 in 10, is it? Still transact with cash. 9 in 10 transactions.
Payments
that happen in South Africa are
cash. So it's just under 9. So yes. So, yeah. But Duncan, the thing is that many people pay quite often for day-to-day necessities, right? So our research shows that an average South African pays, and when I saw the number for the first time, I also couldn't believe it, around 1,500 times a year, which is like around 5 payments a day.
Wow.
So I don't know if I make 5 payments a day, but think about it, you know, taking taxis, buying your lunch, taking taxi home, and those are usually very, very small payments.
Yes.
So most of these cash payments are for very small amounts. And then the remaining 10% are all the digital payments we are used to seeing.
Right. And this program that you're working on, which we're going to get into in this discussion, is hopefully going to start to change that use of cash, to make the economy more digital. But this has been years in the coming. You've been working on some big projects to fundamentally overhaul the back-end systems that you operate to prepare the country for rapid payments. You're moving, as you mentioned earlier in the discussion, to the cloud, but you've been doing a major upgrade of your underlying IT infrastructure. Maybe just take us through what you've been involved with in the last few years in terms of those upgrades and getting ready for this new payments environment.
And some of the things you have already seen, right? Debit check, making sure that the debit orders, because there was this debit order abuse when people were taking money even without their authorization. So debit check was one of these modernization initiative on the debits. Mm. So that was one example. But historically, we are a platform which even today has to handle a lot of transactions. So in the first few months of a few days of a month, we have to maintain 300, 400, sometimes 500 transactions per second.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, those are withdrawals from ATMs. I have 200-300 people trying to draw money every second, you know.
And they don't want to wait more.
They don't want to wait, and they don't want to have the denial or something that something times out. So you need to keep up. So our SLAs have to continuously improve. So what we have been upgrading our infrastructure, going to, you know, virtualized data centers so we can spin off new servers relatively quickly if there is a demand for, you know, higher processing, like during Black Friday or during Christmas time. Mm-hmm. So we have been doing all of that, but it was more enhancements to the existing things we have. Now, the new platform you mentioned, the rapid payments, it's a complete overhaul. It's done in the cloud. It's done on APIs, microservices architecture. So it's very different.
What is the microservices architecture? What does that mean exactly?
It means that in the past, many things were kind of these monolithic things, right? So if you wanted to change one little thing, it was months or sometimes years of a project because you changed it, but then you have to retest all of these things. Did you break something else while you were changing that thing? And that's not how technology works these days. These days you try to break down a complex problem into very small pieces which work together to actually solve the complex problem. So basically the functional architecture or the functionality of our solutions, now you have very small specialized pieces of code, and it talks to each other through APIs, and these components are called microservices.
Right. So it's a much more modularized approach that allows you to...
And you can quickly change
right?
things,
I'm about to say.
Yeah, if you want to change something. And I feel that that's also with the Rapid Payments Program. And by the way, the Rapid Payments Program wasn't about rapid payments when we started 3 years ago at the end of 2018 when I joined the company. It was about rapid program because we learned that technology is now different. It's like 3D printing. In my mind, 3D printing changed manufacturing, right? You can now try things out relatively cheaply and quickly.
Right.
So that's what we did also with Rapid Payments Program. We started building these APIs, the microservices. We put it in the cloud and we invited different players who try it out. It wasn't production ready. Don't get me wrong. Sure. It wasn't hardened or anything like that. But it created this excitement. Oh, we can do payments this way. It can be so much easier to connect. It should not take 6 months. Mm-hmm. So we created excitement, which then helped with the momentum of the program overall.
And I suppose the pace of innovation in the financial services industry is so much faster today than it was just a few years ago. We've got fintech players coming in. Crypto is part of the ecosystem. There's a lot happening. You almost need a modular system like that where you can innovate rapidly and introduce new ideas, see what works, see what doesn't work, discard what doesn't work, and integrate what does work very quickly into the national payment system.
That's the difficult task. That's something called the future-proofing, right? But you don't know what kind of future you are building for. Like telephone was invented by Bell, to listen to concerts remotely. Look at your smartphone today. It's quite different. So what I'm saying is we are putting kind of a physical infrastructure in place which has to cater for all kinds of use cases we currently don't have an idea. It's like when you build roads, right? You lay the asphalt down and you build roads. You want to cater for future electric cars, buses and everything without necessarily changing the infrastructure. You change the rules a little bit, you tweak it, but we need to build something which enables all kinds of use cases we currently don't even think about.
Right. Right. So this new platform, the Rapid Payments Program has been the term you've used to up to now, but you've actually got a more consumer-friendly name which you're going to market.
Yeah, we want to change how people perceive digital. Right? Mm. And the fundamental, they are kind of the Rapid Payments Program actually has three objectives.
Right.
One is to come up with a product which we will launch to the market, like PayShop. That's how we're going to call it.
PayShop.
And it's going to support the new economy, the digital economy ideally, but the fast economy South Africans now have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And we want to create something people will feel comfortable to use rather than cash. Mm. And we can get into it because there are a lot of challenges to make something digital as attractive for people like transacting in cash. The second one is that it's a new way, as I mentioned, of running payments platforms or infrastructures, right? It's going to be in the cloud. So we are also putting foundation for any kind of new services, like the debit check may eventually migrate on the same logic, microservices, API, right. EFT, all of that stuff. And the third thing, which is probably equally important, for us, every time we want to introduce a new product or new idea, it's not just doing something within BankServ Africa. We need to get something we call a critical mass, right? So get majority of the banks, majority of the fintechs to kind of like the idea and then move with us on this journey. And I mentioned this prototyping we started with, 3 years ago when we got people excited. It allowed us to be quite fast in delivering a new product for industry like that. Because when you look around the world, these things can take 5-7 years sometimes. And we are third year, so not so bad. So those are the three things the Rapid Payments Program is actually giving us.
Let me pick up on that last point you raised. I presume all the banks have been working with you through this process. Are we expecting all the big banks in South Africa and maybe some of the fintechs as well to announce and launch some exciting products on the back of the Rapid Payments Program pretty short order? Pretty sharply.
That's the idea. Because unfortunately, the one thing is to build the technology, which is not easy, but it's also not the most complicated thing. The second part is to start convincing South Africans that digital payments can be cheap, they can be affordable, they can rely on them. And most importantly, and that's the most difficult part where we need the banks, we need fintechs and everybody to collaborate, is you need to have some assurance that most of the places where you go, you're just carrying on with your life. Most people don't want to take a talk or think about payments, right? You want to buy your food, you want to buy a service. What is your guarantee that wherever you go, they will actually accept a digital payment? So then you feel comfortable that you don't have to carry a lot of cash around and stuff like that. So we will have to educate, and we will, educate under this PayShop brand that, when you see the little logo somewhere or where you see the name, you know exactly what to expect. You can scan a QR code, or if you have a USSD feature phone, you just, use a sequence of characters and stuff like that. So we will be doing an education. The problem would be if we have, let's say, only two banks participating. It's hard, right? Then you do education and you say, well, you can only pay to the other person if they bank with this bank or the other bank. So we need something we call critical mass. And we are now in market acceptance testing with all the large banks. I hope they will be able to, meet the timeline. We want to go to market in March. So March we will be launching it. And we need to have as many players to address majority of South Africans.
So let's say that I'm an average South African who catches a taxi each day, goes to work, buys my lunch, the analogy we've been using in this discussion so far. What is my payments post the launch of PayShop? And I want to move from cash to digital. What would my payments day look like? What would I be carrying in my pocket to make these payments? How would it work?
So I like that everybody starts with the taxi use case, which is probably the most difficult use case. So have you been to the taxi? I have, right? It's very fast-paced environment. It has all its specifics. So I know that there are some players being in banks or non-banks who are trying to solve for that. But taxis are difficult, right? Because you have so many people coming in and out.
Taxi owners, I think, prefer cash for some reasons as well.
That's exactly. You always have kind of tax optimization and other things.
Right.
But generally, the idea is that today, an average South African, when they receive money, being it a salary or being it a social grant or whatever it is, they go to an ATM and they withdraw it. So basically, the bank accounts, even though as a country we have a very high penetration of bank accounts, so the safe stores of value, which are heavily regulated, but people don't use it as a transactional account. They use it as a mailbox. So we did also a bit of a research. It's a combination of factors, right? It's historical. When you have the banknotes, you know you get money, right? It's not trusting something digital, which you may feel, it may go away one day. The other thing is people feel, and that's a real feel or fear, that if you receive a salary for this month, at the end of the month, it will disappear from the bank account. So there are some real concerns people are having, fees as well, right? Okay, I'm worried that if I leave the money there, the fees will slowly kind of eat away most of it. And that's a problem, because once you get into the habit that you withdraw all your money in cash and then you transact in cash and you contribute to this almost 9 out of 10 statistics, you don't build your transaction history. You don't build your credit history. If you are a small business owner, nobody gives you a credit to grow the business. And that's kind of the problem with financial inclusion. It's not only about payments. It's these other services which you are not eligible for. So the idea here, and it will be a major lift, right? We need to show that PayShap is different, that it's not going to cost too much money, that people can trust it, that most places where they go, it would be accepted. The idea is that we would allow South Africans to leave money on the account where they received it. And they go, then go to your taxi or go to the, to the informal merchant and just scan the QR code and say, okay, pay. Yes. And, not carry cash around, because in South Africa, it's still a risk to carry a lot of cash around you.
So it's going to have to be ultra convenient. It's going to have to be very, very cheap. How cheap?
So that's the thing. So this is something we need to leave to the market. There is no price regulation. Some countries around the world, like India, they introduce a price regulation. So the government said, no, we will kind of limit the prices for transaction below certain threshold.
Right.
And I think they even compensated, the merchants and the banks for that. I don't think that's something which will be happening in South Africa. We will leave it to the market. What we need to do in the center, behind the scenes, we cannot charge much. So we are thinking, or we are talking about few cents per transaction. There is also something called interchange, which is a big thing in payments. And that means, how the parties who are all playing in exchanging the payment, they share some of the revenue. And in some cases, like card payments, unfortunately, these interchange contribute to higher cost of an acceptance of a card payment. The South African Reserve Bank sets the interchange in this country, and they actually set the interchange for PayShap very, very low. So they are really indicating that we expect the market to be as cheap as possible. But it's going to be a competition between the banks and everyone else to make sure that if you are enabling somebody to pay 10 rand digitally, you cannot charge 8 rand for it, right? Especially if the center cost 15 cents, right? So that's what we have built. And I think most of the participants on this journey with us, they understand that it's not really about, capturing the 10% of digital payments we have and, allowing people, rather than using a card, to use a QR code. No, it's really about the 90% of other transactions which we want to bring into the more formal digital space.
I've been amazed, just before COVID hit back in March 2020, South Africans were very reluctant to use tap to pay at point of sale. As soon as COVID happened, I noticed that tap to pay
exploded.
Took off. Now everybody uses it. Tap your card, tap your phone, tap your watch. It's now accepted as a safe means of payment. Is the sort of tap to pay infrastructure where you see this rapid payments infrastructure going as well? When you get on the taxi, you simply tap your smartphone and you've paid for your ride. Or are we going to see other types of interactions at the point of sale?
I think we will see, and that's kind of preparing for the future and thinking about the art of possible. So the tapping, it's still usually riding the card
kind of
payment
solution
underneath with all its, you know, fees and stuff like that. You don't necessarily need to be tapping, right? There are other ways how you create this interaction. One is, as I mentioned many times, you can scan a QR code, right? So you can be further away. There are all kinds of benefits of QR code. You can carry more information sometimes, but there are other things, right? How we are setting up this, this PayShap solution is that you will be able to just, you know, tell people, for example, your cell phone number, and it will be linked to your bank account or multiple bank accounts if you want.
Right.
So then when somebody wants to request money from you, you can just tell them your cell phone number. And they just key it in, boop, press enter, and then your participant...
On the internet or where?
Well, on their solution, acceptance solution, exactly. And then it talks to our PayShap solution, and your bank which participates there, we ping because we say, hey, this number seems to be registered with this Duncan's bank. So we pass it over, and your bank is obliged to pop up a channel, being either a USSD code to you or just an app code, and say, Duncan, somebody wants you to pay 300 rand for something. And you just say yes or no.
Okay.
So there are very different ways of the interaction. But exactly what you are saying, we are trying to get away from kind of the established ways that either you have to tap or you have to tell somebody or account number and branch code and name of your grandmother and many other information, which is not convenient, right?
But Bank South Africa is going to leave that to the market to decide. You want the market to innovate. You're not going to say, this is how you're going to do this.
So what we did, yes and no. What's important for us is that we call the PayShap a scheme or something which should bring consistency of experience. And especially if you are trying to educate country and citizens here that, hey, this is going to be awesome for you to use. It brings a lot of benefits. The experience has to be kind of similar, regardless if you bank with FNB or if you bank with Standard Bank or any other bank. You need to know what to expect. And that's what we did in kind of minimum requirements. So we say, you know, for example, it should take, you know, these few steps to initiate a payment. Or when your bank receives a request to pay for you, they need to publish it to you in a real time. Or another example is that we said once you receive money through PayShap, your bank has to make it available on your bank account within a few seconds. And you have to be able to use it right away. So we set kind of these minimum requirements, but we don't want to, you know, stop innovation. So I believe that many people will come up with even more innovative way how to capture customers, the new markets and stuff like that.
Is this going to change the traditional, sort of, if I can call them legacy banking processes? For example, I want to transfer money from my bank account to your bank account online. It currently takes 24 hours or longer. It's a weekend for that money to go through. Is that going to change as well as we move to the rapid payments?
That's the idea of rapid or real-time payments or PayShap. So it's really the way how you move money. One thing, Duncan, is because it changes quite fundamentally and challenges many people in the value chain of a payment. So our platform has to be always on 24/7, handle a lot of transactions. Imagine, I mentioned 300 TPS. Well, but imagine that we have to eventually serve nine times that. That's not just a doubling, right? It's 10 times, almost 10 times, tenfold more. So it will challenge many things. The other aspect is, I mentioned to you that the money will be irrevocable. So what I mean by that is when you decide to send me money, in 10 seconds, it either succeeds or fail. So you know if the money went or not. Not like these days that sometimes it can be pending and you don't know. So it will either succeed or fail. But when it succeeded, I can go and take the money and spend it right away. So each bank on both sides or each participant on both sides, they have to make decision. Is this a genuine transaction? Is it a fraudulent transaction? So building new risk management, fraud management engines in the center. So that's one thing we are doing, building a better fraud and risk management. But each bank will have much shorter time to decide if it's a fair transaction. So what I'm saying about that is that we are starting with a relatively low value limit. So you will be able to send money up to, let's say, I think we are starting with 3,000 rand.
Okay.
So that's what you start with because we want to manage the risk, you know, for everyone. But just one statistics I want to give you. You talk about this EFT, how you send money, and it takes actually more than half of payments going through EFT are below 3,000 today.
Okay.
So it's actually a large volume even in the existing environment. So we expect that some of the volumes may migrate. But one other thing is also, Duncan, don't forget that many of these traditional processes, not every single payment has to be real time. Because it costs, it come at a cost, right? Sure. You need to have liquidity and all of that stuff. So if you pay salaries, you probably know a few days in advance how much you will be paying your people. And you have an ERP system, which is kind of more batch driven. So I believe, and that's what we have seen around the world, some of this batch or, you know, longer lasting payments will still stay around for some use cases.
For some time. Okay. So 3,000 rand limit, will that just be during a pilot rollout of the system?
We'll see. Like, we don't have a limit technically on the platform. We, the only limit is that us as Bankserv Africa, we can process below 5 million. So everything above 5 million has to go to the high value system, which is run by the central bank. So anything, you know, below 5 million is our space. So you know that there is quite a distance between 3,000 and 5 million.
Yes.
Usually, again, we are not the first country introducing something like PayShap. So you saw a progressive increase. So I don't have a timeline. We really will see and learn. And we expect that most of the 9 out of 10 payments are actually below the 3,000 limit. So it should not be as constraining at the beginning.
Is there a particular market that South Africa is modeling this off? Have you looked at particular examples around the world and said, this is well suited to South Africa, let's do what these guys are doing?
So yes, we did. But it was more an inspiration rather than copying, because the one thing, you know, something which worked in another jurisdiction or another country doesn't always work in quite similar markets either. Like M-Pesa, I think you know about M-Pesa and Kenya, you know, super successful. In South Africa, it has been attempted a few times, and for all kinds of reasons, it never succeeded. But having said that, when we started the journey, we actually took quite a few people on a journey to Southeast Asia. And sometimes, you know, I came from Canada, so the Western world, people feel like they do everything really well, right? US or Canada or Europe. When it comes to payments, they are not bad. But they are behind compared to South.
The U.S. was using checks until not long ago.
Yeah, Canada is still using checks. The only thing is, like, you take a picture of it when you receive it, and then you submit it digitally to your bank to deposit. Well, but anyway, so not going to Canada or U.S. for inspiration, but we went to Southeast Asia. And Southeast Asia, India, Thailand, even Singapore, we've learned a lot. So the platform we are putting in place, it has some inspiration from the unified payment interface in India. And India is now, well, China is probably still larger, but it's hard to get real data from China. But based on the data available, India is one of the markets with the highest mobile real-time payment penetration in the world.
Okay. Now, I want to ask about social media, because there's some really interesting stuff, particularly on instant messaging. I know that Meta Platforms, as they're now called, what used to be called Facebook is starting to experiment with payments in WhatsApp in some markets. I think it's in Brazil and
India
and possibly one or two others. They're probably going to look at African markets, possibly South Africa at some point. You may have even had conversations with them. I don't know. Will this platform, PayShap, facilitate those social media giants from coming into this market and offering those solutions?
So one thing, so the short answer is that the platform is, again, flexible to cater for almost any use case, right? Because it's taking instruction to move money from one place to another. One limitation currently in South Africa is the regulation. You know, who can basically instruct someone to move money, who can hold deposits. So we got indications from the South Africa Reserve Bank that they have an intent to open access and allow some of the non-traditional or less traditional players to play in the payments landscape. What we are building, and that's what I, you know, we never know what's going to happen in the future, but my prediction is, and that's what you saw also in India, is that these giants or these technology companies, they don't always want to be bothered to hold deposits, because it comes with a lot of burden, you know, regulatory burden, because once you hold someone's money, you have to be heavily regulated, right? What they want to, though, is to create channels where when people want to buy something on Facebook Marketplace, or you are chatting on WhatsApp that you want to buy, want to buy something, you want to be able to initiate payment. So what Facebook or Meta is now looking for is more, can I actually reach the bank accounts of my customers and initiate a payment? And that's what I kind of see, that we, there will be multiple channels how a payment can be initiated. But at the end of the day, if you bank with Bank A, Facebook will just instruct, through PayShop, through a request to pay, potentially, hey, Duncan, now you are on WhatsApp. You just said that you want to pay 100 Rand to someone. Your bank just pops up the app over it and says, hey, there is this 100 Rand request. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we want to enable these channels to actually start transacting with the secure traditional banking world, because many of South Africans, they have a bank account and they get money there.
Right? Yeah, so. Yeah. And it raises an interesting question about micropayments on the internet as well, which has been a bugbear, I suppose, for publishers and content creators online for many
pay
years.
Pay for an article, pay for one episode of this wonderful show, right?
Does that facilitate it? You could do this with PayShop?
That's the idea. Mm-hmm. So again, depends how much you value your show, right? If you charge 100 Rand, it's probably easier, because even if there is a 1 Rand fee, for example, to pay for it, people will be willing. If you want to charge a real micropayment like 5 Rand, we just need to make sure that when it gets to the market, people will price it appropriately.
Well, next time we do an interview with you, we'll charge for access using micropayments.
I hope so. I hope so.
We'll definitely try that. So fascinating stuff. It's launching in March next year. Payment limit initially of 3,000 Rand. Look forward to trying it out and seeing the impact it has on the market. But before I let you go, Jan, there's some other projects which Banks of Africa has been working on, which I also want to explore just briefly. I believe there's a platform called Request to Pay that's in development. This is a kind of a second phase of the rollout
of
PayShop. What is Request to Pay? When is it coming? What is it going to do?
So I already mentioned to you, so PayShop PayShop in March will enable two things, right?
Yep.
You will go and you will register through your, we call it a store of value owner, but basically your bank, let's say, if you have a bank account, and he will say, hey, I want this bank account to be linked to this cell phone number, which I have.
Yep.
And then when I want to send you money, I can just say, I am sending to this cell phone number. And I don't even have to know who you are, technically. But what it does, the platform, it says, it kind of does the, you know, validation. We realize that this cell phone is registered. And then it comes back with Duncan and your last name, but with some asterisks, so we kind of are, you know, papaya compliant. Mm-hmm. And then I say, I pay. And in less than 10 seconds, you have the money, you can use it. Which is very powerful, because you can use it in merchants, you can use it anywhere. Mm. And you don't have to tell me the cell phone number, you can show me a QR code and I just scan it and it happens,
okay.
Right? If we are close. So that's first. Then second one is this request to pay, which will be the next feature rolling out. I still hope it's going to roll out next year, because, you know, the functionality is kind of developed already.
Not in March, later next year.
Later next year, yeah. And that's, it has many use cases. One is the obvious one, we go for dinner. And next day, because I paid, next day, hey, Duncan owes me half of the dinner. So I send you a request to pay and I say, hey, Duncan, you owe me 200 Rand for half of the dinner. And it reminds you, because immediately, you know, the bank pops up and say, yes, no. Hopefully you say yes. And the money again in a few seconds come back. Mm-hmm. But I already mentioned the example that you are somewhere, you know, in a channel, like being a taxi or being it a WhatsApp or something, and you want to pay someone. You can use the request to pay. So there are very creative ways, because you can just key in your cell phone number. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, somebody who wants your money, they will just come to the platform and they will say, okay, is this registered? You say, yeah, we route it. And it again pops up on your screen and you say yes. So there are many, many use cases of the request to pay. And I think that's one of the features which will be used by all kinds of players for all kinds of creating things.
Something that just came to mind is South Africa, which is a very data poor country. People, a lot of people have smartphones, but a lot of people don't have access to data all the time. Will you need data to do all of these things?
Well, that's a good question. So, of course, if you are using a smart app, you know, smartphone app that requires data, I have to understand exactly how the USSD codes are happening. If it really charges you data, it depends which USSD code. And that's going to be, again, left to the market. I know that even today, if I understand correctly, some banks, they, when you do use the app,
it's zero
it's
rated.
Free. It's zero
so
rated.
So we basically the same thing, zero rating.
Yeah, so I think the banks will come up with some ideas how to make it possible. Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, you're working on something which sounds very fascinating. And last time we spoke, we chatted about it briefly, but and we won't go into detail here because I know it's a quite a complex platform.
Next episode,
it's going to have a big impact as well, potentially down the line. And that's Banks of Africa's digital identity project. What is that and when is it coming and what is it going to do?
So yeah, so sometimes I feel we are an ambitious organization and we take big challenges. So like changing, you know, how people pay in a country, it's one challenge. And when you start, the odds are against you. You mentioned Banks of Africa. Usually these programs, by the way, they are not ours, right? Because we need to do it with the community.
Broader market.
You know, so we drive it, we come up with ideas, but it's really with broader communities.
Of course.
So the digital identity is another similar example, right? Because as South Africans, I think we should be proud what we have, right? The Department of Home Affairs, the database they have for pretty much all citizens where we can validate if you are who you are based on your ID number. We can even get some of biometric information about you. Mm-hmm. That's great, right? That's a very good foundational piece. Us, I mentioned before that we are all about interoperability. Mm-hmm. I mentioned, you know, that the ATMs talking to each other, point of sale talking to each other. We are applying similar principle because when it comes to digital identity, it's more than just validating that you are a citizen or that you exist.
Yeah.
We may want to have your credentials about your education. We may want to have your vaccination credentials, right, or whatever. And what you see in the market is that these different solutions are popping up and mushrooming around. What we are driving with this initiative is, call it a scheme or kind of an interoperability platform that we create rules and some technical infrastructure that people will be able to trust each other. So if there is a provider which is providing, you know, academic credentials, then there is a Home Affairs which is providing the database of citizens, and there is somebody else who is providing vaccination mm-hmm. in a self-sovereign way, so you are in control of all your information, we will make it all talk to each other and trust each other and kind of adhere to minimum standards. So it's in very early days. We have a prototype again because I told you that we are doing things differently now. So we started with a sandbox with prototype, and the community is larger than just banks. Mm-hmm. We have telcos involved. We have insurance companies. We have government involved. So it's in early days, but it will help with the vision of digital economy we see and more verifiable claims.
Right. It sounds like something that the blockchain was made for. Are you building this on the blockchain?
Currently we are. I think it may be a bit of a hybrid. Even the PayShap, by the way, the proxy component, so where you register your cell phone to your, it's actually a distributed ledger technology as well. So we are combining different technologies where we see a fit.
Yeah. Do you see through all of the innovation that you're doing here that you're going to introduce crypto payments into the ecosystem at some point?
Well, that's one thing the South African Reserve Bank is actually experimenting
it
with
is.
The central bank digital currency. So they may be publishing something soon. I have been involved in other initiatives around the world. For us, Duncan, as a central bank, as a clearinghouse, we need to understand that we will need to be able to clear and settle whatever value people are willing to hold. So today, if it's digital rent, we do it. Tomorrow, if people want to trade, you know, crypto tokens, mm-hmm. we need to find a way how to clear them and settle. And of course, you know, if entire economy moves to Bitcoin, unlikely, it hasn't happened over the last 14 years, so it's unlikely. That's fine. They don't need us for it. Yep. But once in a while, you need to go from and in to the ecosystem. So you need to make payment from your Bitcoin wallet to your Ethereum wallet or to your Rand bank account. And that's where I see the evolving role of clearing houses. We will need to be able to facilitate all of these.
Jan Pilbauer, CEO of Bankserv Africa. Thanks so much for making the time. It's obviously a fascinating time to be in financial services, not just in South Africa, but worldwide. But some incredible stuff happening. The March 2023 launch of PayShap, I think, is the one to watch. And hopefully it's going to lead to a lot of innovation in the fintech space in this market going forward.
You will experience payments differently starting next year. Thank you so much for being.
Jan, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Duncan.